Hear us?
Yes.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, I'm Pete Griffin, and I guess Andrew is here largely because Andrew had put on a workshop in Juneau, Alaska, a couple of years ago. He wound up in Juneau and talked to some of my storytelling friends and wanted to do a workshop, and I got a call from Tom, and Tom says, "Hey, we got this guy from New York City, storyteller and humorist, that wants to do a workshop, and would you be interested?" "Oh, from New York City, sure." And I was going,
he's going to have a lot to share with you, know.
It was improv, an improv workshop, and I thought, improv, yeah, I don't like improv, I don't do well at it, I don't think quickly enough, but, you know, they're not going to kill me if I fail at this, so I went to the workshop and was greatly enlightened in how Andrew applied improvisation to organizations. And we thought he would be great at the pre-conference, and we worked out a deal. He's here, just put on a 3-hour pre-conference session for us, humor and improvisation, and wow, what great discussions we had. Yeah. Came away with some tools and some insights that I will go home with and apply those to storytelling in the future. So, Andrew, maybe a brief recap of what you did today and anything else that comes to mind, and we're just going to have a discussion.
Yeah, no, that sounds great, and thank you for calling in. Thank you for people that listen to the recording a little bit later. I'm always excited and happy to chat with other people about humor, especially fellow storytellers, and giving those tips. And so today, kind of as a high level, we walked through a half-day workshop that I do a lot of times with corporations and organizations, and so part of it was kind of demonstrating how you can take a skill like humor that we know and we appreciate, and how do you take that into an organization and convince them of its value. Similar to how do you take storytelling in, where sometimes they're like, I don't know necessarily why I should use this, where we as storytellers know the impact that it can have. So we talked a little bit about those types of things and kind of went through the traditional structure, which for me starts a lot with the why. Right? Like, why is what we do so important with humor, the value of using humor, the 30 benefits of using humor in the workplace, the 10 benefits for organizations, and really kind of convincing people that it's valuable for them to take time to learn this new skill that, you know, maybe they're either frightened of, they're scared of. You hear people say, you know, oh, I do improv. And even Pete, as someone who's a storyteller, like, oh, I could never do that. And it's like, oh, no, it's just an introduction, a skill that you can build. And so helping people to be comfortable with that. Same thing with stories. Like, people have sometimes this perception of like, oh, I'm just not good at telling stories. I start to say it, and then I like forget the details, and I put it all in the wrong order and all. And it's like, oh, it's just a skill. Takes practice and repetition to learn. So we started with that, moved into some of the skill of humor, what it involves about sharing kind of your point of view and exploring and heightening that point of view, and then using practice, performance, and repetition to kind of build that skill up over time, and then kind of jumped into some humor devices or humor tools, so how you can kind of extrapolate that specific skill of seeing the world in a more humorous way into things like storytelling or association, incongruity observations, etc. And so it's very interactive, a lot of exercises kind of meant to practice the skill of humor, give people an opportunity to get to know the people around them, but then also hopefully walk away with some either exercises or even written things that they've done so that as a result, afterwards, they can go back and they kind of have a starting point to create humor, because that's the whole goal, is to teach people that it is a skill and give them the skills and the encouragement they need to go out and try it, you know, tomorrow or the next day or that kind of thing. So that's kind of the focus, at least that's my intent. I mean, you guys were in the workshop, so I'd be curious if there's other things that you took away or other things that you would add to that.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that you talked about, but I wasn't quite sure. So this is a little explanation that I'm looking for of mm-hmm. the difference between people who voluntarily come to a session, mm-hmm. like we did today,
yep.
versus the people who have to show up or they'll be fired.
Yeah.
You know, as a facilitator, how do you tread that water?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we did talk a little bit about that because, like, when I first started teaching any type of comedy. It was teaching improv, specifically for people who wanted to take an improv class. They wanted to use improv for performance. And so that's a certain mindset. These are people who have self-selected as to improv is a thing that I want to do. I have, for whatever reason, in the back of my head, a belief that I can do it. That's why I'm here. And so they're a little bit more on board. You can start with kind of a weirder exercise, and they're like, oh, I guess this is improv, let's get into it. Whereas when you start to do it for corporations and people are there because it's on their calendar and they're supposed to, and someone within their organization, their manager, an HR person, whatever, said, hey, we want to do this, we think it's valuable, to come in, if you immediately then jump into an exercise that feels a little bit weird, you're going to be like, nope, not for me. I didn't want to do this in the first place. So many people don't want to have that interaction anyway. I'm sometimes that same way. Even though I do so much interaction in my own program, I'm sometimes sitting in another training and people are like, all right, we're going to do some interactive, so go ahead and do it. And I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no, I want to be typing. I want to be, like, I'm an introvert. I want to be on my own, right? And some of the, like, things that you do are, you know, it's the, back to the stereotypical trust falls. Of like how that's become the stereotype of bad team building, because you're like, I don't want to do that with my coworkers, right? Some of the people I like, but other people, it's like they might drop me or I don't want them to touch me or like whatever it is. And so as a facilitator, one of the things that you want to do, one, which is why I spend time on the why, right? Because the people who have hired me, maybe they've seen my TEDx talk, maybe they've seen me at another event, maybe they've read a book, whatever. They've bought into it. But the people that are there who are just showing up, they maybe don't know why humor is so valuable or storytelling is so valuable. So it starts with trying to, in a funny way, right, using humor at the top of the presentation so you get people laughing so that, you know, subconsciously in their brain they're like, well, maybe I'm not going to learn anything, but at least I'll be entertained. Right, at least this will be fun and it's not going to be boring and I'm not going to hate the whole thing. So you start with humor to do that. And then you get into the relevance of why this is relevant to them. Right, and that's why I do the 30 benefits, is because typically within those 30 benefits, people are going to identify with at least a few of them. A lot of them, it's the last one. The reason why the last benefit is it increases the size of your paycheck. Because at the end of the day, people are like, okay, this is going to help me make more money? Then, okay, I'm going to at least listen to that. Or it might be, hey, I've been recently really trying to build better relationships with people, and so they see that it can help you do that, and so they kind of buy into it. And then from there, you can expand. And like in my applied improv workshops and other things, it's very much about starting with simple exercises that everyone can do and that aren't on the spot. So like doing exercises like everyone's involved and they're doing it, or they're talking just to one other person or two other people, helps them to get more comfortable. And then later at the end of the workshop, you might be doing, okay, one person get up, you go up and try this one thing. But they're now comfortable. You've built some safety, some security into the room that they feel more comfortable stepping outside of their comfort zone. Whereas a group that is self-selected into taking an improv class might be ready to jump on board with it like that. So that's some of the stuff that we do to manage that.
Have you ever had this situation, Andrew, where somebody does freeze up and just say, you know, nope, this isn't for me. I can't stand this. I have to be here, but I'm not participating.
I haven't. I know that it can happen, and I know that you can manage it in different ways. One of the things within applied improvisation, for example, is it's, you know, it's all self-selected participation. And I know some great facilitators, Patrick Short, a guy out of Portland who does phenomenal applied improv work, will say things like, you know, you don't have to do any of these exercises, but just know if you don't do the exercise, you can observe, but you can't, when we debrief it, when we talk about it, you can't comment. Right, commenting is only for the people that have done it. So you can't be like, what I noticed from over here. It's like, nope, you don't get to do that. Even if you're the manager. Because sometimes it's the managers that are like, we want to watch how people do it. It's like, that's fine, but you don't get to participate. But the thing that I do is I assume participation. So there's never a time that I say, hey, are you guys okay with this? And some people do, some people don't. I just assume that people are going to do it. So I start talking, I chat about some things, and then I say, all right, everyone stand up. And they don't know why they're standing up, so everyone then kind of like, all right, I guess we have to stand up. Stand up. All right, so now pair up with the person next to you. And you start small. It's never like, okay, so what we're going to do is we're all going to walk around the room, and when I say walk, stop, all this kind of like, no, it's like everyone stand up. All right, so to start, we're going to walk around the room. So whenever I say walk, you start walking. Whenever I say stop, you stop. All right, and walk. Stop. And then you build to it. And then that particular exercise, you switch those two commands. Like, all right, now we're going to make it a little bit harder. And whenever I say walk, you stop. Whenever I say stop, you walk. All right, and then we do that. And then you build to it so that you're doing it piecemeal-wise. So no one instruction is a giant leap for them. They're kind of like slowly getting into it. They're dipping their toes in the water, and before they know it, they're completely swimming. Right? So you can do that same thing.
I've done the watch stop. You're
luring them into a full sense of security.
Right, yeah. In a sense, or you're building the trust so that they have that, right? Yeah, but it is the one side is it's false security, like gotcha, but it is also that, like, by building it in a way that's comfortable for them, for
well,
sure.
When I participated in that, you know, it felt a little awkward, and then when the command switched, I found that people started laughing because everybody screws up, and of course everybody starts laughing, and you're just laughing at yourselves. You're not picking on somebody laughing. It's, hey, this isn't as easy as it sounds.
Yeah, and it's a kind of in an anonymous way, so people feel comfortable with it. And then you do small group activities where it's two people, and now it's just one or two people doing things. And you're like, yeah, I'm used to having conversations, so I can do that. No, now it's three people, and then for some workshops, by the end of it, particularly a public speaking type thing, by the end of it, they're standing up in front of people, and they never thought that they would be comfortable with it. Because, you know, they're so nervous about it and like, oh, but we're all friends. My brother's a professor at Texas A&M, and I've taught him a lot of applied improv because he teaches public speaking, and he gets really good ratings from his courses. And people are like, but people hate public speaking. Why are you rated as such a good professor in this class? And he's like, for the first two or three classes, we mostly just do applied improv to get comfortable. And then the next time when you're up giving that first speech and you're nervous or whatever, it's your friends that you've done quote-unquote silly things with that it no longer feels as difficult. And, like, that's what I love about improv is if you can get comfortable doing improv, any other type of presentation skill seems a lot easier because it's like, oh, I'm not doing this thing where it's in the moment, or I'm not being
your toes so much.
Doing this bunny exercise that I don't know what it means. You know, it's like I've already freed myself of taking myself too seriously in this setting.
And one of the exercises that we did today, even though we're just on a phone conversation, maybe people at home can try this. Could you take us through the pointing your fingers, thumbs up exercise?
Yes. Yeah,
so I'd like a second chance.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that. So this may be a little bit challenging without being able to see visually, but we'll kind of step through it. So this is just, it's a simple kind of, almost feels like a coordination type exercise. So what happens is on your right hand, point forward, like as if you're like pointing to someone, or almost the Uncle Sam kind of look of, you know, I want you kind of thing. So you're just pointing forward. On your other hand, you're going to give a thumbs up. So your fist is closed, but the thumb is up, just like you would say, you know, thumbs up, good job. And then the goal is just to switch those two. So that then on your right hand, it's the thumb up. On the left hand, it's a finger out. And you can switch back and forth. And you don't want to have a gun. So some people will have the, you know, the handgun, or they'll have, like, the closed fist. And you're just switching back and forth between those two things. And, it starts, like, some things that help is, like I mentioned earlier, if you do the Nordic track approach where you kind of, like, almost punch through it. It can help.
I keep shooting people.
Or if you go really, really slow, it can help, right? If you start going really slow, or if you do one hand first, if you're like, okay, I'm going to switch my left hand first to a finger out and then to a thumbs up on my right, you slowly do it, and then over with practice and repetition, right, you get better, and that's what we talk about. We talk about how we build skill through practice and repetition. So it's a fun activity that everyone can do. They all laugh because, like, some people get it right away. Most people, it struggles a little bit. But it gives us an opportunity in applied improv. The most valuable thing that we do is the debrief. It's talking about it afterwards. So it's connecting the things. Because when I first started teaching improv to some of my fellow workers and stuff like that at P&G, they'd be like, oh, that was kind of fun, but I don't know why we did it. I don't know how this helps me be better as a project manager or what I do. And so the debrief is where you help to make those connections to say, hey, this exercise is like this point in some way. And then also to ask the question, to have the audience kind of give you those responses of like, okay, what are scenarios where learning practice and repetition, or being reminded that practice and repetition is needed for a skill, when might that be helpful to know? And you leave it up to the audience to kind of pick these things. And so they're starting to make the connections themselves. So instead of just talking at people the entire time, you're engaging them in interaction. You're doing something physical, maybe in a way to kind of get the energy moving. But then also they're making the aha connections themselves.
Yeah, one of the things you talked about were four different types of humor, and mm-hmm. you used some words and phraseology that I had not come across before. But affiliative mm-hmm. humor is one of them. Could you talk about that just a little bit?
Sure. So the styles of four styles of humor, they're defined by Rod A. Martin, who is a psychologist who wanted to understand humor a little bit more and also understand what types of humor were more effective for different leadership styles and that kind of stuff. And he wanted to codify a language around it because we know humor, but it is really kind of hard to define in some ways. And so he defined four styles. The first style he defined is affiliative humor. And this is like positive, inclusive humor, where there is no target of the humor. It's all just about, you know, a positive experience that you're creating. And so this can be team building type activities where everyone's doing the same thing. You know, if you think of almost like laughter yoga would probably be affiliative humor, like just dancing around, dancing as a group is affiliative. And that's not necessarily do that in a corporate setting where you get everyone like it. It can be a very effective way, maybe later in a workshop. But it's all about positive, inclusive. I think of Ellen DeGeneres in her talk show. It's like that just like it just infuses like positivity where you watch that and it's like, ah, you feel good like having watched that. And so that's affiliative humor, bringing people in. And so it's defined by the fact that, one, it is positive, and two, it is inclusive. So then you can do the second style of humor is self-enhancing humor. And self-enhancing humor is using humor as a way to improve your situation. So rather than crying as a result of something, you laugh instead. And this is, you know, Jerry Seinfeld or other observational comedians that are taking kind of the absurdities of life and helping us to laugh about those absurdities. And it's positive humor that is exclusive in the sense that it's for yourself. Right? It's more about you doing it for you, self-enhancing. Then there's self-defeating humor, self-deprecating humor. This is a negative form of humor where you have a target, but the target is yourself. It's you poking fun at yourself, making jokes about your stature, your voice, that kind of stuff, which can be a very effective way to get people kind of on the same side as you. And then finally, there's...
And that's Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah, that's Rodney Dangerfield. I get no respect. Right, exactly. Like that type of self-defeating humor, for sure. He's like the quintessential self-defeating comedian. And then finally, there's aggressive humor. And aggressive humor is where it's negative humor, but the target is someone else, right? It's exclusive in the sense that it's you pointing at something and poking fun at it. It's sarcasm, it's satire, it's The Daily Show, it's George Carlin. So it can be a very good form of, like, it can be very funny, right? And a lot of times, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, a lot of times when people first start into humor, they think of sarcasm, satire. When they're younger, they tend to be a little bit more maybe aggressive in their teenage years or, you know, early to mid-20s or whatever. There's that's kind of a natural thing that you're drawn to. For whatever reason. And it's valuable for catharsis. It's a great way to make people laugh. It is a way to connect with someone else if you're on the same side of that. But if you're poking fun of someone else, and that's where it can create like a little bit of a rift between people. And so there's different styles. There's different reasons or times that you would use different types. Some people are more inclined to do one over the other. And the workplace, we talk about, you know, really affiliative humor is the most positive form of humor because it is inclusive. Self-enhancing and self-defeating are both good to use in different situations. Then aggressive can be very difficult to use in an appropriate setting just because it is targeted and it can be seen as negative.
So are there spectrums within those as mm-hmm. well? Because I'm thinking, like, you know, you mentioned George Carlin and... you know, the satire, the satirist Colbert and John Daly, or John Stewart. But the person who comes to mind for me is like Don Rickles, who mm-hmm. I just could not stand his humor. I found him painful mm-hmm. to, you know, how pointed and how aggressive he was. So there is kind of a spectrum within those areas, isn't there?
Yeah, for each one, there's certainly a spectrum. And also, depending on your relationship with the person that you're using the humor with, and the relationship of your audience and the situation and how their demeanor is, something that you might see as aggressive humor, another person might see as self-enhancing humor. Or we were talking, few of us were talking a little bit earlier about, if you think of people who are in very high-stress jobs, people like doctors, surgeons, paramedics, EMTs, if you talk with them, a lot of times they talk about how they have very dark humor. They have black humor that they use, that to an outside world would seem like, how could you possibly say something like that? but is incredible catharsis for them that would be seen as aggressive, but to this group of people, it's actually affiliative because it's helping them get through this kind of situation. And so there are pros and cons of every single type of humor, and there's definitely a spectrum between them as well. What we, you know, I know we talk, sometimes groups are interested in like, how do you understand or how do you manage humor across different cultures? Because it is very different. And what I know talking with some British people who have, work in American companies, they say, how do I manage that? Because what they think of as affiliative humor of me kind of poking fun of someone that I've just met is kind of like a way to say, hey, we're, you know, just kind of both friendly here and it doesn't matter what our job title is. That person takes as aggressive humor. Why are they being mean to me? And it's just different styles, different cultures and stuff. And so it's going to change. It is a spectrum. And so part of the difficulty of humor and training it is that it changes. The situation is very much depending on whether something or not comes across as funny. And something that works or has worked 99 times in front of 99 different audiences that you've done it might be incredibly offensive to one, you know, that 100th audience. And it just depends on the situation. And that's an important part of using humor is starting to understand your audience. And that's why humor is so closely related to high empathy. People who use humor are typically seen as being more empathetic and having higher EQ because it's part of that skill is to manage the situation and know if someone is upset, is this a time to make a joke to help them relax or will a joke make them even more upset? Yeah.
So, Andrew, in your work in Procter & Gamble, did you ever use humor that backfired or you ran into hot water?
I never...
Or was that why you're not at Procter & Gamble?
Right, I asked to leave. No, I never... You know, there was never a time where it was like, I need to, like, get out of here type thing. There's certainly times that humor didn't work, right? I would say a joke that I thought was really funny and then no one would laugh. Even times today in the workshop, there are moments that I, like, this is a great punchline. I say it, and it's kind of like maybe a smile or a little bit of silence, and it's like, oh, and then you just move on about it, right?
Well, was the guy with the cards that said, laugh now. He fell asleep.
Yeah, right, yeah, exactly. He wasn't telling you guys to laugh. My laugh track that I hit play on wasn't working for whatever reason, right? But that's part of it is, like, you don't dwell on it, you move from it. And I think that I've always been, as I mentioned to some of you, like, for whatever reason, aside from my first couple of stand-up shows, I made it a decision pretty early on to always to be clean, to do clean comedy, to follow, you know, in Seinfeld's footsteps and Brian Regan and stuff like that. Because I wanted my, I'm a mama's boy, and I wanted my mom to always be okay watching my stand-up set, right? So I didn't want her coming and being like, oh, that was my son that awkwardly talked about this topic that, you know, no parent wants to hear about. And so I took that with me into PNG, and so I don't, there was never a time that I was like, oh, that was an inappropriate joke because of subject matter. But there are certainly times where it was like the joke didn't work. And I know, and talking with friends, there are times that, yeah, they've tried things. I know a good friend of mine worked at IBM, and he was in sales. And so he was with a client, and I think it was like Disney, it was some movie production thing or whatever. And they were chatting. He was trying to create humor, and the Hangover 2 movie had just come out. And he made a joke about how bad the movie The Hangover 2 was. And he was like, it completely shut down the people that I was talking to. I was like, I don't know if they worked directly on the movie or if it was their favorite movie or what it was, but I made that joke and they completely shut down. And it took him some time to rebuild that connection. And that's the risk of aggressive humor. Affiliative humor, typically, you may not love the affiliative exercise or thing that you do, but you're typically not going to hate it. You're not going to, like, put up a wall as a result of it. And so that's where, like, understanding it. So, but it certainly does happen. And so what we talk about in the workshop is how to make sure that your humor is appropriate, right? That no one's been fired because of a bad joke, but maybe they've been fired because of an inappropriate joke. And an inappropriate joke either has an inappropriate subject, so, you know, using humor isn't an excuse to talk about sex or drugs or that kind of thing. It has an inappropriate target where maybe you're making fun of, you know, your coworker, your boss, or something like that. Like, you don't want to have an inappropriate target. And then finally, that it might come in at an inappropriate time. If, you know, you're announcing layoffs, and if you're the executive, you don't want to be like, oh, well, I told you, was told to use observational humor. You don't want to talk about how upset, how much smaller your yacht's going to be, when people have just lost their jobs, right? So understanding the situation is part of understanding how to use appropriate humor.
Mm-hmm. I think I met that executive in one of my companies, unfortunately. Yeah. Said things. Thank you. That's really helpful. It's Jules here, because I came out of human resources and I did a lot of employee relations where I did use humor to teach laws or analogies. But how do you handle the people who are worried that because they're bringing a humor workshop into a thing, that you just explained you're going to be teaching the people the nuances, that they're not creating a bigger monster, someone who couldn't, like, form a good, healthy sentence to begin with, and now you're giving them permission to use humor. I'm just kind of thinking about some of the conversations I have with HR about, like, what you do to manage people's interactions or give them the right tools. Any thoughts about that when you're pitching to the organization? Do you ever run into resistance with that?
Well, I think that part of it is, I mean, certainly there's a worry, right? If you start to give people permission to use humor, mm-hmm. that it's going to go off the rails, and, like, that means that people are going to be saying racist jokes everywhere, and they're going to, like, you know, they're going to maybe take their work less seriously or that kind of thing. And that's where, for myself, part of it starts with, again, the research-backed reasons to use humor, because it's just like leadership skills, right? You could say, oh, we don't want to necessarily train on leaders because what if someone becomes a really strong leader and then convinces everyone in the organization to leave? Or what? Like any tool that you teach could be used for good, could be used for bad. Humor people are just tend to be more scared of because they don't necessarily know. So many people think of humor as this kind of like nebulous thing, and it's either you're born able to do it. And so the people that have humor and can make people laugh, they're typically kind of like, okay, yeah, I think I can understand it. People that don't feel as comfortable with it, they tend to be a little bit more worried about it. Or if the only type of humor that they use is with their friends and it's very, like, you know, it's maybe sexual or it's, you know, inappropriate or it's, you know, cussing a lot or whatever, if that's the only style that they know, they are maybe worried about it. And I think part of kind of managing that is, again, talking about the benefits of it, and two, letting them know that you recognize that, hey, there are challenges, but the way that we're going to train it is by X, Y, or Z, is by making sure that people use it in an appropriate way. One like great rule for that is the newspaper rule, right? Would you be comfortable with whatever that person did showing up in the front page of your hometown newspaper? And this is for yourself to check as well. And if you're like, oh, I don't know if I'd want my boss to see that I was making fun of my boss, then it's probably not appropriate for the workplace. And so that's a way to check. I think the other thing, the reason, and it's a chicken and the egg type thing, is that I think a reason why a lot of conservative organizations work with me, right? I worked at P&G. I've worked with a number of, like, big companies that you wouldn't necessarily look at as like, yeah, they're super into fun. They work with me because of the track record of the client list that you have, the testimonials that you have to say, hey, this was about value. I think an advantage for me in some ways compared to other people is I have a degree in computer science and engineering. I am an engineer. When I talk to people, I talk about being an engineer. And so they start to – there's a little bit of inherent trust to say, okay, this isn't just about having fun and being silly. This is for a purpose. And part of that is in the languaging that you share with people. And so when you can – and also knowing that those are objections, right? And so as you build out your own business for storytelling or other things that you do, think about what the objections people might have and then make sure that you get testimonials that answer those objections. So that if people tend to think of, I think it's going to be silly, oh, then have a testimonial that comes in and says, you know, where someone shares something along the lines of, you know, I wasn't exactly sure what I was going to learn, but in the afterwards, there are so many things that were applicable to my day-to-day job. If it's about appropriateness, then, you know, work with people. Because when you're getting testimonials just strictly from the business side, people are often happy and they often have some of these thoughts, but sometimes they need the right prompt to help them express kind of the idea of what they feel about that workshop or that thing that they've experienced. So you might say, like, hey, do you find this applicable to what you do? Oh, yeah, there's all these great things. Okay, that's the testimonial. They didn't come up with that of, like, nothing, but the prompt is there and it's still – you don't want to put words in people's mouth, but you can kind of, like, help prompt them of, like, hey, this is an area where I'm curious what your thoughts were, what your reaction was to this particular workshop. Does that help? Does that make sense?
It does help, and I respect the fact you chose the more intelligent and smart humor and clean humor, because I think it takes a lot of work and timing and structure. I mean, what you mentioned, Seinfeld. I just think people don't realize, like, those people, if you watch any of the folks that do great, like Eddie Izzard, they're so super smart and insightful, so they have to really hone every word and phrase. So I think it's a great tool to give people, because it, you know, it's not just a throwaway comment that they're going for the cheap laugh, or like the Kathy, is it Kathy Griffin? She's very aggressive. You know, that just feel like it's diminishing people. I think what you do is very, very smart. So,
no relation.
See how you evolve in the back, and the backstory about how you get there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, I mean, the probably the most important tip in learning humor would be the third that I mentioned today, and it's practice, perform, repeat. If you ask any comedian, how do you get better at comedy? They say stage time. Right? That's the best teacher that you can have. And taking a stand-up comedy class, I know some stand-up comedians are completely against stand-up comedy classes because they're like, you got to learn it on stage. But a comedy class can cut down the learning. It can probably shortcut the first year or 2 years. It can teach you things like remove the mic stand. If you're going to take the mic off the mic stand, put the mic stand behind you, talk into the mic, small things like that that you would have learned on your own, but you might as well learn that from an experienced person anyway and get through it quicker. But it is really for your own perspective. It's getting on stage, it's trying it, and also it's trying it every day. That's one of the things that we talked about a little bit today, is that you can try, it's not always try stand-up out, it's not always be the person that tries to be on, but if you have an interesting idea, if you have a new story that you want to tell, tell bits and pieces of it to your friends when you're out in conversation and see what works and what doesn't work and make modifications kind of from there, because it is that practice and repetition. And I think we also talked a little bit at lunch in the conversation of, it's much easier, I would like, when you're learning humor, really work on learning clean humor, because one, that's going to give you a more broad audience to do. Corporate, you have to be clean because of HR, right? You don't want that, you don't want to ever do that thing where, because corporate's interesting, because if you do a stand-up show or an improv show and 99 people love it but one person doesn't, that's okay. That one person maybe just doesn't come back to see you. If you do a corporate engagement and 99 people love it and one person doesn't, and particularly that one person was offended, then it can create a lot of problems, because they can create, you know, hey, they said this thing or whatever, and it can lead to kind of like issues from there. And so the more, like, when you can work clean, when you can work more universal and positive, inclusive ideas, that really helps. Because then if you get booked on a show and you want to happen to go a little bit dirtier, you don't have to, you know, be as restricted. Yeah. It's much easier to go that direction than it is the other direction.
So one of the...
Hi, this is Tricia, and this is great. Thank you so much for doing this. Mm-hmm. I just have a quick question. I was wondering if you could maybe demo or give us an example about teaching somebody how to use the tool. Like, you've talked about activities to get people comfortable and things for them to do. Or maybe a resource on that. You know, but the actual, kind of like, how to do it. I'm going to be giving a presentation, and I want to use humor appropriately in the beginning for you. Someone said that, you know, where would you start with that person?
Yeah, so it kind of depends on the setting. In a general workshop setting, what I do is, and so what we walked through today was, we first started with what I think of as kind of some of the general abilities you need to have to create humor, the steps that go into creating humor. And so we said, share your point of view, explore and heighten, practice, perform, repeat. That's kind of like my starting point of like, humor is born from that. And then specifically from there, there are different devices or tools that we use. So story is a device that we as a humorist can use to add humor to a presentation. Or incongruity is one that we talked about, where you just changing the word that you say, switching it from one word to another, is very helpful. I think you mentioned a story about changing one thing from uncle to brother, made something that heightened something a little bit more, made it maybe a little bit more incongruous or a little bit more meaningful, where sometimes just that word in of itself. And so depending on the group, right, where you're training them, specifically what you want them to learn, there are different steps you take them through. So for each one of those devices today, what we did was we started and we said, okay, what is incongruity? So we gave a definition of it, right? Incongruity is just saying something unexpected. What are examples of incongruity? So we talked about maybe, you know, interesting socks and someone wearing a suit but then having interesting or colorful socks. That's incongruity. We showed an example of incongruity where there are store hours listed on a store, but instead of them saying they're open from 8 to 5, it said that it was open from 7:56 to 4:55, right? Of just something a little bit different.
On then we Mondays. Did,
yeah, Monday, on Mondays it was this. On Tuesdays it's this, right? Some store places do. We're open from whenever we get in to whenever we decide to leave. That's usually around 9 to 5, but who knows, right? So something a little bit different that you're not expecting. Then we did, for the way that I structured it, is we do an improv activity, either conversationally as a group or in pairs, just to build that skill. So we talked a little bit about what's a phrase that we have, and we got the phrase of, do you remember what phrase we hit?
A 10 cents or
a dime. It was a dime a dozen, right? So we said, okay, someone lists a dime a dozen. And then now we say, okay, with incongruity, sometimes it's just switching a word. We can use a humornym or a humorous synonym to it. And so someone's like, oh, what's a different way that you could say a dime a dozen? You could say, oh, 10 cents for 12 things. And so we said, oh, okay, well, maybe that in and of itself is something humorous. If you were telling a story and normally you would say, oh, this thing was dime a dozen, if you said, oh, this thing was 10 cents for 12 things, you know what I'm talking, like a dime a dozen, right? That would be something a little bit different. So we do an improv exercise just to build the skill and also convince people that they can do the skill in a very low-stakes way, right? Improv, it doesn't matter if it's not funny, that's okay, it's, you know, ephemeral, I think is right. It's temporal in the sense of it disappears. And then we go into a writing activity. And so then that's like, here's a very structured thing that you can do. Go ahead and try it out. We ran out of time today, which I apologize to you guys. But you can debrief it. You can have people kind of try a couple on their own and then debrief it afterwards. And the debrief as a facilitator is really valuable to be positive. Take the things that they do really well. Even if they're like, it's not very good. One of the things that we didn't have it come up today, I think, because of storytellers, but a lot of times people will, when sharing something, they'll present it with apology face. Mm-hmm. Right? You guys know that improv is an apology face of like, here's this thing, I think it's okay. Yeah. Or it's a really weird specific thing of like, people will, they'll say, what I wrote down was, and it's like, they're already hedging a little bit of what it's going to be. Or it's not very good. An interesting thing in comedy is that people will believe what you tell them. And so if you say, this isn't very good, they start to think, this isn't going to be very good. And sometimes that's helpful because if it is good, it breaks expectation and maybe creates a little bit more laughter. But more often than not, they're like, oh, well, this person isn't confident in what they say. So you just want to be conscious of that. And so you walk through the debrief, you're positive, you find the good connections, you maybe help create some good connections, and then people are like, oh, okay, I have it. Now I've done an exercise, so I believe I can do it, right, the improv exercise. And now I have a written exercise so that later when I want to try this type of humor, specifically incongruity, I have an exercise that I can go back to and refer to work on. So that's an example. That's maybe a broad example. Does that help, and do you have maybe, is there something more specific that I can help with?
That's very helpful. Okay.
Andrew, right at this time, why don't you mention your website and any resources that you've written that might help people?
Yeah, absolutely. So my website is www.humorthatworks.com. And there's a lot of resources out there on the website. There's, I think, over 400 blog posts on the value of humor in different areas. There's also a humor repository, which is just a collection of a bunch of funny things from around the web that are appropriate for the workplace.
Are they deceased or?
Because we're possible. They're all dead. They're all dead jokes.
Dead funny.
No, I think of it repository. I'm an engineer, and so a repo or a repository for a computer scientist is like GitHub is a place to go to for resources that other people have created to use. And that's the intention of it, is if you just need a laugh, go there, find some things that are laugh. Or also if you're looking for, you know, I need some humor that's related to leadership, you can go and do a search and try to find something for leadership, and that will give you some ideas of, oh, I can use this video on leadership, this great video from Bobby McFerrin on how he leads an audience without ever saying a word, right? Oh, that's a great video that I can share, right? So a repository for that. And then there's also, I wrote a book called 501 Ways to Use Humor in the Workplace. And it's broken up into different categories. So there's 100 ways for communication, 100 for building relationships, 100 for problem solving. You'll notice these are all from the why that we use humor that I mentioned earlier. And the whole intent of that was to say, people would tell me like, okay, I'm interested in using humor, but I'm still not comfortable knowing how. This was meant to be a resource guide for them to say, well, if you're sitting there and you're like, I want to use humor in an email, but I don't know how, open the section on emails, and there's 20 different ways to use humor in an email. Pick one that you like and try it out. So it's meant to kind of like answer the response or the objection that people have of like, I don't know what to do. Well, here's 500 ways and pick one. And then people can kind of naturally do it, you know, themselves. They can expand from that and everything. There's also links to a couple of different videos. So I have a couple of TEDx talks that are out there. One at Ohio State from a couple of years ago on the value of humor. More recently, have one on the skill of humor. So that kind of talks about some of the things that we talked about today at Texas A&M. So people can watch that. And then also some other videos on my YouTube channel. There's also a few that are different exercises that you can do. So walk, stop, the exercise that we talked about. There's a video of that.